We're going to continue with alpha reactions today, but I thought we would at least address this question. So what kind of functional group is this? Carboxylic acid. And what two things do you need to make an ester? A carboxylic acid and an alcohol. Don't we have both of those things right here? And the problem tells you, you make a cyclic compound, you're going to make a cyclic ester, and what is that called? A lactone. So the product in this case is a lactone. It's protonate, opentactate, protonate, protonate, opentactate, protonate. So I won't write the mechanism out. I'll let you do that as a review. But the product is going to be this. Which, if we labeled our carbons, we can confirm that I've got the right connectivity. Now, I know for some reason, cyclic compounds throw people off sometimes. So you really just needed to focus on what functional groups were present, and that was the clue to realizing what functional group's going to get formed. Yes? Probably a minus one or something like that. I actually did it during the lecture notes yesterday, so easy to do. If you got everything else right, maybe even half point, you know? Questions about this problem? Yeah? Lactone is the name of the functional group, which that's what the question asked for. That's a different functional group. So, flipping back now to alpha reactions. We'll go over the rest of the quiz once you have it in your hands. But I know there was some lingering wonderment about this one. We have already discussed the aldol condensation in lab, and we also discussed the acidity of alpha protons in lab. Remember, we did have that discussion here. That discussion, the alpha proton acidity, those pKa values, that's a lecture topic. So just to be clear about it, alpha acidity is a lecture topic. But having just talked about the aldol condensation, we will revisit the aldol condensation after we finish some of these other alpha reactions. But we're going to have a different focus in lecture. In lecture, we're going to focus on synthesis, how to recognize it's an aldol condensation, and what would the product be if given a set of reagents. In lab, we talked about how the particular reaction you did in lab was an example of an ideal aldol condensation. So aldol as a topic is both a lecture and a lab topic. Specifically, the portion about an ideal mixed condensation, that will be a lab topic only, since it's related to your experiment. So I just wanted to clarify that for you. Now let's continue with alpha reactions, because on Tuesday we had started with alpha halogenation under acidic conditions and under basic conditions. I wanted to review, because I did that in sections 1 and 2 anyways, but I know I also had garbled a bit of the theory in the lecture that day, so that's why, especially for this section, I wanted to recover. So, first, let's rediscuss alpha halogenation under acidic conditions. So if we start with something like acetone, and we react it with an acid, which I don't know why acetic acid is normally shown, possibly because it's a weak acid. But we need an acid to form an enol, and then we're going to have bromination. You did see the mechanism the other day, so I won't write that again, but I'll go ahead and write the product. Is it likely that this reaction is going to occur multiple times? No, not under acidic conditions. The way I expressed it was that you have to form a carbocation at the position of the carbonyl as part of the mechanism. You have bromine, which overall, remember, is an electron withdrawer. It may have resonance, but it's a withdrawing atom. That puts a delta positive one position over where that carbonyl is that wants to form a positive charge. We had already seen last quarter that situations where you have a positive and a delta positive next to each other aren't favorable. Well, didn't we have two positives right next to each other? But still, any time that you have like charge being brought together, not a favorable situation. So, because the bromine is electron withdrawing, it makes that carbocation less likely to form, which means the reaction doesn't want to happen. Your textbook takes the opposite, the flip view of that. Instead of focusing on the carbocation stability, it focuses on the oxygen. It says the oxygen is less basic, but they're tied together. So whichever way you want to explain it, that's fine. I just want to point out that my explanation happens to not exactly match the book's explanation, but they complement each other. So, in this case, under acidic conditions, halogenation only occurs once. And that's because the halogen, by withdrawing electron density, makes the intermediate harder to form. So any questions about the acid version of alpha halogenation? Then let's go into the base version. Now let's say that we have something like this. An aldehyde. And we react it with sodium hydroxide and bromine. Since it's under basic conditions, the enolate, not enol, will be formed by removing the alpha proton. Once the alpha proton is removed, a halogen is placed on there. What does that halogen do to the possibility of further reaction under basic conditions? Is it going to happen in this case? A secondary or subsequent reaction? Yes, because it's opposite behavior of what we had under acidic conditions. And this is back to my little pet topic of opposites and duality in these carbonyl reactions. Whatever destabilized the acidic mechanism, because you have a carbocation forming, stabilizes the basic mechanism because you instead have a carbanion forming. Carbanion likes having a delta plus next to it because that encourages the negative charge to form. So put one bromine on, it makes the alpha proton even more acidic, and the next reaction happens more easily. But in this case, there are only two protons. on the alpha position. So the reaction I showed you the other day was a special case, but I wanted to come back and show you this version where there aren't as many alpha hydrogens to highlight that you don't always have what I called the halo form reaction. Because in this, no halo form, in this case specifically bromoform, is formed. The product's just going to be a dihalogenated aldehyde. So, in this case, multiple halogenation occurs. Since the inductive effect of bromine increases the acidity of alpha protons. Since only two alpha protons are present, only two are replaced, and no haloform reaction occurs. Going back now to the type of example I showed you on Tuesday, if we did have a methyl ketone, and so I'll present it this way, I'll say special case methyl ketone. In that case, we initially form a trisubstituted compound. I'm putting this in parentheses or brackets because you can't isolate this. And this is the one part of the haloform reaction that's a bit different, or it's outside of the area of just alpha chemistry. It gets, though, at the reversibility of basic reactions. So I still need to look up exactly what the pKa's of chloroform, bromoform, and iodoform are. But they're close enough to water that when hydroxide interacts with this intermediate, it can attack the carbonyl. It can do that actually at any point in the reaction, but it won't do anything productive until you have the three halogens on here. Once you do, and once that carbonyl is pushed open, oh, perfect. Sorry, should have warned you first. Once that carbonyl is pushed open, it can reform, which if hydroxide was the better leaving group, we would just go right back to where we came from. The point is, these haloforms are acidic enough that their bases are weak enough that they can be expelled at this point. So, reform the carbonyl, bond breaks. That portion would still technically be reversible, because if they're comparable in basicity, why can't they go back and forth? Problem is, this is just like the saponification of an acid. Because if the haloform ion is kicked out, we form a carboxylic acid. That haloform ion Although not as strong of a base as other organics, it is still basic, and the carboxylic acid, in organic terms, is fairly acidic. So you get an instant neutralization, which prevents, then, the reversibility of the reaction. So there's a little bit more complete presentation of alpha halogenation. Anyone have any questions? Then I'm going to follow the book's sequence and move to what it presents next, which is alpha alkylation. Yes? This is all chapter 19, and chapter 19 flows kind of in the order that I'm now presenting it. It actually tackles, I think, alpha acidity first, then it goes to the haloform reaction, then it goes to the alkylation reaction that I'm about to show you. Aldol comes, I believe, right after that. So let's move to that alkylation reaction, which is significant because it's a carbon-carbon bond-forming reaction, which is really important if we're trying to build up larger organic molecules. Now, there's an issue that we will discuss momentarily about the type of base that's appropriate to use in this kind of reaction. Let's ignore that for the moment, though, to focus on the reaction itself. So we could start with a ketone. Again, not worrying about what kind of base, we will use a base. In fact, let me add this note that this kind of reaction is essentially base only, at least the way I'm about to show you. I'm going to show you an alternate reaction that kind of avoids the need to form an enolate, but let's not get too ahead of ourselves. We've made this enolate. It's basic, and carbon, when negatively charged, is nucleophilic. And so if we had a primary alkyl halide around at this point, we'd be able to do SN2. Now, it looks more complicated than SN2 because I've combined a resonance step in it. But as I said earlier today, you may combine resonance with any step that you like and it'd be acceptable. So this is a delocalized SN2, we end up with an alkyl group at the alpha position. It's a pretty straightforward mechanism, but let me again point out why this is important. It's important because you're able to form a new carbon-carbon bond. And so again, we're going to be discussing this reaction in terms of synthesis. Now, judging that that doesn't look like too confusing a reaction, let's now talk about the kind of base that we should use. Because when we did the ideal mixed aldol condensation, we were able to get away with using sodium hydroxide. And that was because only one of the two compounds even had alpha protons. And once it formed an enolate, it is able to react primarily just with one substrate, the more reactive of them. But in this particular case, let's think about the consequences of using hydroxide to deprotonate this cyclohexanone. And I'll get at this concept in this way. Let me write a neutralization reaction where I leave out the arrow in between. I'll show the products, which are going to be the enolate and water. And let me ask you, what kind of arrow should go here? Because I know that that was a topic of great consternation, meaning panic, before the quiz. Is it forward? Is it reversible? Is it resonance? What the heck is it? Let me ask you, what would it be in this case? Okay, we have a suggestion that's reversible. Why would you think it would not be a forward arrow? I would agree it's not a forward arrow, but why? Different base strength. What's the pKa of water? 15.7. If cyclohexanone is pretty much a normal ketone, what would roughly be the pKa of it? 19, okay. So which of these two is the stronger acid? Out of the negatively charged compounds, which one is the weaker base? Hydroxide, I think you mean. Because if water is the stronger acid, its conjugate is the weaker base. Which means, automatically, cyclohexanone is the weaker acid, and the enolate is the stronger base. And so if you were going to put any kind of arrow and you wanted to be technically correct, you would use a lopsided reversible arrow like this. Now, I will not have you all write lopsided arrows, because that really then gets nerve-wracking about how do you write a mechanism. And that level of detail is not even always necessary to express a mechanism to a chemist, even if you're talking at a high level. But this arrow does communicate the fact that it is reversible. The product will form, because remember, if it can form, it will form, but also indicates this is not a likely process. So now imagine that you had the combination of these two things, the cyclohexanone and the hydroxide, but you also had the alkyl halide around, or wanted to. If you added hydroxide to this reaction, it does not go to completion. That means there's a significant amount of hydroxide around. Hydroxide could easily react with the alkyl halide, and so you'd get a byproduct. So since hydroxide cannot irreversibly form the enolate, it would be a poor choice of base in this reaction, since you could get a side SN2 reaction that occurs. I'll add a stipulation to that, though. Hydroxide is a poor base in alpha reactions of monocarbonyl compounds. Because after we get through the first round of reactions, we're going to come back and deal with a specific reaction of those dicarbonyl compounds that I had you memorize the pKa's of. So what I'm saying now applies just if you have one carbonyl. Hydroxide is a poor base in reactions of monocarbonyl compounds, since it normally cannot produce the enolate irreversibly. Produce, yes. This means a significant proportion of hydroxide will be present, which means a side substitution reaction could occur.
Better.
So we need something, some kind of base that's strong that can force this thing to happen. But we have to be careful about what base we select. Because if we just used lithium, butyl lithium, we've seen butyl lithium before as a way to form Wittig reagents, a strong base to pull off whatever proton we want. But something like that's going to directly attack a carbonyl. So we play a trick. We make a base that's really strong, but also sterically hindered. And that base is LDA, lithium diisopropyl amide. Which amide in this case doesn't mean the functional group amide. It just coincidentally in this case means negatively charged nitrogen. A little bit of a peach impediment there. Lithium diisopropyl amide, which looks like this. So two isopropyl groups attached to a nitrogen, which is negatively charged, so it has two lone pairs, with a lithium counter ion. Normally this is not bought, at least if you do this reaction routinely, because it is easy to make this base from cheaper components of butyl lithium itself and the amine, the conjugate acid of this. So synthetically, we take butyl lithium, react it with the amine, which would have a hydrogen, and that makes LDA. The lithium base is a stronger base than this. That's why I wrote this as a forward arrow. And if any of you with these little electronic devices wouldn't mind looking up the pKa of diisopropylamine. Because I know it is really not acidic. It's got a pKa in the 30s or 40s. I'd like, just for my own purposes, to memorize it. So, point being, though, even if we don't know the exact pKa, we could again compare cyclohexanone, this time with LDA. And same situation. We're going to wonder whether LDA... 36, thank you. I had guessed 40 the other day, a little high. Which means... So saying, we're wondering if this can deprotonate the carbonyl and make the enolate. And so now we have an acid that's pKa of 36 versus a pKa of 19. We now have the weaker acid on the right as a product and the stronger acid on the left. Which means we have the stronger base on the left because of the conjugate of the weaker acid. And then the conjugate of the better acid is itself the weaker base. Which means, especially given the broad difference in pKa values, this is going to be a forward and effectively irreversible reaction. Yun. Because strong base means high likelihood to dissociate, which also means negative delta G. Or the more it's likely to dissociate, the more negative that process is in terms of delta G. So if you go from strong to weak, you're going downhill in energy because you're allowing those dissociations that want to occur to occur. If you try to go from weak to strong, weak acids are ones that don't want to dissociate, which means they have a more positive delta G for dissociation. So when you go from weak to strong, you're actually going uphill in energy, which doesn't want to happen. Another way to express it is, remember, we have delta G is equal to negative RT ln of K. So we can come up with an overall equilibrium constant based off these pKa values, and from that still prove that in this case, it's going to be negative delta G, and if we were tried to reverse it, it would be positive. If you had a really, really, really strong acid reacting with a weak base, but I'm not going to be asking that. That's a Chem 1A or Chem 1B question. And not that it's, the question's not worthwhile, but it's not going to come up in this situation. So I don't want to confuse everybody by going off on that tangent. But you may, of course, come by office hours. Now, we got our irreversible base, and so now just in terms of synthesis, to wrap it all together, I could do an alkylation reaction by reacting with LDA. To form the enolate, then use whatever alkyl halide, whatever primary alkyl halide I want. To do substitution. Why is it that it has to be a primary? Not sterically hindered. We do have hydroxide, which for secondaries can cause elimination. And if these are stronger bases than hydroxide, that means that elimination is even more likely, especially since these enolates are going to generally be slightly more sterically hindered than something small like hydroxide. So the reaction in this case only works well with primary substrates. But if there aren't any questions on this, I want to show you a variation of this reaction. And this variation is normally done towards the end of the section in a lot of texts. But I think I like the way the author did it in this case because it shows the two alkylations in relation to each other. This is what is called the Stork enamine synthesis. And let me draw you a general structure of an enamine. It is what it sounds like, partially ene, alkene, partially amine. Are enamines thermodynamically stable? Now, careful before you answer that, because what if both R groups are alkyl groups? Does it have anything else it can convert into spontaneously? No. It's only if we do have a hydrogen on that nitrogen that this group is unstable. So be careful with questions like, is it stable or not? Again, with both R groups being alkyl groups, it is isolatable and stable. But let me do just a brief review of enamines, since I know we haven't played with them since last quarter, but let's pause for. So, when will an enamine form? Which that's where we had our discussion about stability last quarter, because there are certain situations where you can make enamines, certain situations where you can only make enamines, and certain situations where they would not want to be made because you would make an imine instead. I'm going to do this part quickly because it's review, but I'm doing this not just for your all's benefit, but more for the new students in the class in all three sections, because they might not have had the same discussions of enamines and imines and enamines that you all had. So, if we have an aldehyde or a ketone, and we have some kind of primary amine. I'm going to point out right now that by being a primary amine, that means it has two hydrogens on it, which is going to be significant later. So the first part of the reaction is a little different than the protonate open attack deprotonate sequence that we've seen from most of these cationic carbonyl reactions. It's overall cationic because there is still an acid catalyst needed. But too much acid prevents the reaction happening because it would just make a salt with the amine. Too little acid, nothing happens because you do need an acid catalyst. But because the amine is basic, that's the justification for showing this carbonyl being opened by the amine. Along with the fact that the optimal pH for this reaction is 5, again implying that it's not necessarily the acid that's causing this thing to start. So we have attack and open followed by protonate deprotonate. Now for simplicity's sake, I'm going to drop the extra hydrogen that was at the carbonyl because it's no longer needed. But I'm of course going to write in both of the hydrogens on the hetero atom. It's at this point where one or the other, the oxygen and the nitrogen, protonate and deprotonate respectively, although recall that they do not occur simultaneously. So I show the alkoxide being protonated, and now the nitrogen loses the first of the two hydrogens. We then form an intermediate, which, as a refresher, is called a carbonylamine. This much of the mechanism is exactly the same whether you have a primary or secondary amine. Recognize that tertiary amines don't even have hydrogens on them, so they can't even get this far in the mechanism. So only primary or secondary amines or ammonia itself could do this reaction. I forgot to write that carbonylamine term. Now we have another round of protonate open attack deprotonate. Again, for both primary and secondary amines, the next two steps will be the same. Protonate the oxygen. Which will make water, which will be a leaving group. And now, if we have a primary amine, we could show resonance. Well, technically, we had a secondary amine. We could show resonance. But the point of the primary amine is that once you make the resonance structure, you end up with a positive charge on the nitrogen, which can't be isolated. Except that here, we can lose the hydrogen, and we end up with the imine. I'm not going to write the mechanism out again for a secondary amine, but let me show you the intermediates that are formed. So I'll take, again, the same starting aldehyde, ethanol, but I'm going to react it with a secondary amine, which has only one hydrogen only on it. So we get as an intermediate the carbonylamine. But notice we now have no hydrogen. That means when we get to that pivotal part of the reaction mechanism, we can't form a carbon-nitrogen double bond because we can't, at least not permanently form it, because we can't get it neutral. So what happens instead is you have an alpha hydrogen come off instead. Which is how we end up with the enamine. Which, to anticipate where we're going next with this topic, has a resonance structure. That because positively charged nitrogen is not the worst thing in the world, this makes this a non-trivial resonance structure. It still wouldn't be the best resonance structure because we have charge separations. But it's not as bad as some other molecules in the same situation. Now, what is this compound or this product a little bit like? If we got rid of the nitrogen and put an alcohol in its place, what would we call this? An enol, right? And enols do alpha reactions. These sorts of enamines also do alpha reactions, but they do so under less drastic conditions. pH 5 is all that's necessary to make the enamine. And then you don't need a special base to get it react. That's because the nitrogen's lone pair does such a good job delocalizing. That's, again, why this resonance structure is not trivial and how we take advantage of this to do an alkylation reaction. So let me show you an example of this. So I'll first react this with a cyclic secondary amine, only because it happens to be a common reagent. But please note, it's not pyrrole. Pyrrole, as a reminder, has double bonds in it. Well, or actually it doesn't, and that's the point. Why would pyrrole be a very poor base to try to use to make an enamine out of? It's aromatic. Why? The lone pair becomes part of that delocalized system, right? And if you were trying to use that lone pair in some other reaction, it wouldn't be there to make the system aromatic, and so there's a big energy penalty. When we do hit amines later in the quarter, we're going to learn that this is a very non-basic amine. Most amines have PKBs in about the 9 range or 8 range, something like that. PKA or PKB? Wait. PKBs? No, they're PKBs that are similar to acetic acids, PKA. So their PKBs are about 5-ish or so, and their PKAs of their conjugates are about 9. Anyway, we'll get there. Point is that lone pair doesn't want to do anything, so make sure that if you do something like this, you're using the version that has no double bonds in it. Because it only has the one hydrogen, you are going to form an enamine first. which again, we could write a resonance structure for, to show that there would be a buildup of charge at the alpha position. So if we now were to throw an alkyl halide at it, it would react. And after reacting, reform the enamine. Of course, after you're done, you could react with water and acid to hydrolyze the enamine. And get back the ketone, oops, which you can't see. So the stork enamine synthesis is useful because no strong bases are used, which allows for more sensitive substrates to be used in the alkylation reaction. Now, as a side note, you might not have realized this nitrogen could do an SN2 reaction, because we didn't talk about amines in Chem 12A, even though they were probably mentioned in your text. Let me show you why I didn't talk about it. And this is sort of an aside at the moment, because we revisit this topic again once we hit amines as a functional group. Since an amine is a base with a pKb of about 4.7 to 5, somewhere around there, means it's not that strong, but it's stronger than neutral, and it's strong enough to be able to do an SN2 reaction. Problem is, for most amines, after you do this reaction, the product is more basic than what you start with. Because if alkyl groups are electron donators, then you're donating electron density to the lone pair, which makes the lone pair even more basic, which makes the second attack more likely than the first. And the third attack even more likely than the second then. And so this reaction actually keeps going on until you end up with a tetraalkyl ammonium salt. So once we get to amines, we'll be talking about ways to prevent this. We don't have this problem in the enamine synthesis because there's only one hydrogen at that position. So you can't get multiple reaction anyway. So we saw today what? First, we reviewed the alpha halogenation. We moved into alpha alkylation, where we talked about LDA, very key base. We did the stork enamine synthesis. I didn't show you the mechanism for this, did I? That's because I'd like one of you all to be able to discuss it tomorrow. This is your question to take home for homework. You know how I had started getting in this habit of giving you some question that the next day in lecture I then threatened to ask of someone so that I scare some of you hopefully into studying just so you don't go through that embarrassing moment of, I don't know. So the question for tomorrow that might come up and I might ask one of you to discuss is, what's the mechanism for the stork enamine synthesis, the alkylation part of it? I realize we're almost out of time. But I want to just tell you a little bit about what's coming up, because I do know that I still need to fill in the section numbers for the topics. But if you all look at chapter 19, you'd see that's what we are discussing at the moment. How about if you had actually looked at chapter 19 at all? So the most difficult chapter of the quarter, the one that's going to cause the most pain on the test, you all haven't read yet? That would be my broadcast way of saying, you better start on this chapter. Because each one of these reactions may make sense. Each one of these reactions being alpha halogenation, aldol condensation, Michael addition, Robinson annulation, alpha alkylation, stearicamine enamine synthesis, Claisen condensation, which is what we'll talk about Friday, Diekmann condensation, which is related to the Claisen, and then the malonic ester synthesis, which is one of my favorite synthesis reactions. We haven't even gotten to that yet. You have the weekend to read, but your test is a week from tomorrow, isn't it? If you didn't realize, yes, your test is a week from tomorrow. I would strongly suggest you start reading chapter 19. So, again, just to give you the names of these things that we'll be discussing next, read about the Claisen reaction. And then, malonic ester synthesis.